America's founders empowered we the people through our legislature, our duly elected officials. We're not a democracy, we're a republic, a democratic republic. And our congressmen and senators are supposed to represent us. Now, about 20 years ago, we the people got to vote in various state amendments on the subject of marriage. Should it be recognized only as being between one man and one woman? Yes, said the voters in state after state, even liberal ones. Then in 2015, with a bang of a gavel, 5-4, the Supreme Court said same-sex marriage should be the law of the land. And then in late 2022, just last year, our government in D.C. passed the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. The purpose of this was to enshrine in law the Supreme Court's gay decision ruling from 2015 to make sure it would not be overturned the way Roe v. Wade was. Dr. Gregory P. Seltz, the executive director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Freedom, disagrees with both the Supreme Court decision and the recent law passed, even with the help of some Republicans. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Dr. Gregory Seltz, who's the Speaker Emeritus on the Lutheran Hour, he joins us now. Dr. Seltz.
Well, Jerry, it's great to be with you. And yeah, this is a terrible turn for the health of our country, for sure.
Your center deals with religious liberty. Could that be impacted
Correct.
By this so-called Respect for Marriage Act?
Well, we'll see. Yes, obviously any group that professes that marriage is between a man and a woman is going to be challenged because litigation is part of this. The sad part about this is that for the first time, again, the government waded into something and they started to grant rights. Governments don't grant rights. Our government undergirds our inalienable rights. And those are individual rights before the law. And so basically what we were saying is, look, if the government's going to get involved in marriage, it should limit its nefarious activity to that of a man and a woman. Because the only reason governments really care about marriage is because of children, potential children within the bond of that relationship. Well, every other relationship has to go outside of their relationship for children. So our argument was, if you can't limit your role to a man and a woman, and like you even said, and people were saying, let's do that, then you should get out of the whole business. Well, what did they do? They created a new right, the right of gay marriage. And it's just throwing all of our understanding of the role of family, children, all of that is being thrown into disarray.
One of the things that's so shocking is the acceptance of so-called gay marriage, even among some churches.
Well, yeah, but, you know, this goes back to the 60s where suddenly the idea of tolerance, just tolerate. You may disagree with people's activities. You may disagree with the sexual permissiveness of our society, but live and let live. That was kind of what we were told. And what's interesting to me now is that we're the live and let live people politically. We're saying, look, let's just allow us to be able to disagree with you on this. And now the live and let live people are saying, no, we're going to make sure that you have to agree with our view of these things or else. And I think that's another thing people need to understand. We're not the ones politicizing these issues. We are saying, okay, even if you disagree with us, okay, but allow us to be who we are. And what we're finding out with these politicians and these folks, they don't see what's coming with this. This is a way to expunge the biblical notion of these things from the public square.
Well, what about the situation where you have all these different bakers or photographers or people who deal with, let's say, calligraphy for wedding invitations,
yeah,
that kind of thing, florists?
Yeah,
it's comment on that, because that touches on religious freedom and that touches on, you know, the right of conscience.
And so again, even the baker, I've met him several times, and his point was, I serve anybody, I care, but if you ask me to produce something that violates my conscience, I can't do that. And generally speaking, we wrote an op-ed on this called Why Does Every Deli Need to Be Kosher? And of course, good, honest people are saying, look, I go to the deli that can serve my needs and serve my choices, and I sure don't want to force that one down the street to do my bidding if there's other choices for me to make. Well, that's exactly what the problem was. The people that actually sued him said, we're going to shut you down. We're going to shut you down. We're going to destroy your business. We're going to bankrupt you. Baronel Stutzman was the lady that you were talking about, the florist. And she was a 70-year-old woman who actually had a great rapport with even the people who came in to ask for her to do the wedding. She was good friends with them. It wasn't even the gay couple that sued her. It was the government that sued her and wanted to bankrupt a 70-year-old grandmother. And so you start to say, wait a minute, that's not the America that I know to be true, the one that is open to even disagreeing viewpoints on things within the idea of freedom. Well, that's so again, we're the live and let live people, folks. Don't let them tar and feather you otherwise.
You know, I'd like you to comment on the right to conscience or the right of conscience, because this was something very important to America's founding fathers. And I think people need to wake up to realize, wow, this is, you know, this is being eroded in our time. And the tip of the spear in many cases is this whole gay issue or the transgender agenda.
Well, not only right of conscience, but the notion that a conscience formed by the Bible was a fundamental positive thing of the American experiment. The founding fathers were actually more worried about government than people who were free to live out their consciences in community. So they bound the government and they set the religiously motivated, self-governing citizen free. And they thought that that would be that way of organizing would actually protect liberty for the most people. You're seeing that flipped upside down. And so when the government can actually jettison marriage, when it can jettison the church, it becomes the fundamental organization in culture. And what people don't understand is that's bad for them, not good. Somehow we've been seduced to believing that if the government's involved in everything, it's going to be a better place for us all. And it's exactly the opposite. So the First Amendment then was to protect the right of conscience of individual citizens before the law. And that's what's being eroded even as we speak.
You know, that really is an important thing to underscore. For example, your whole movement or your organization is Lutheran. And you think about Martin Luther, where he said, here I stand, I can do no other. You know, unless the word of God convinces me of such and such, I can't change. I mean, and you know, you could even kill me, but I'm not going to change because my conscience is so important. I want you to elaborate on that.
Well, and see, I always tell even my own people of our church that James Madison said that Martin Luther was the forerunner of the Bill of Rights. And what he meant by that was that you have to have a duly constituted state and a duly constituted public church that actually limits the state and empowers citizens for there to be individual liberty. And Martin Luther was one of the first people who talked about the legitimate powers of the state and obviously the legitimate powers of the public church and put those two things in tension. Well, when those things are in tension, there's space for you to be an individual citizen. Where those two things are not in tension, where the government takes over the church or the church takes over the government, you as a citizen ceases to exist. People don't understand the foundations for liberty are a healthy church and a healthy state in its proper role. And that's what Luther set upon us in the Reformation. And James Madison said that's what came to fruition in constitutional limitation of government. And all that's being thrown out is if we don't need any of that anymore, that we can all do it on our own, as if the state will be a benevolencing organization for the first time in human history. And that's just not going to happen. If we keep going this way, you will find out that the state is not the benevolent organization you want it to be.
You know, I'm very fascinated. I've never heard that statement before from James Madison. So I'd like to to see that. Maybe you could send me a link or something. That is fantastic. Okay, how about a comment on the Star Chamber? What was it and why is that significant? Because a lot of those people who were victims of that kind of persecution against their conscience, a lot of them came here and started, you know, the Puritans and then there were the Quakers and, you know, a lot of refugees of conscience, if you will. And they founded the various colonies that ultimately became the United States of America. Religious freedom was the key.
Right. And that's what's so sad about what we're teaching in terms of history of our nation today, that, you know, people have made even the founding of our nation either an economic thing, as if that was the main role. No, almost in every state constitution, it was religious liberty, religious freedom. Those were the issues that drew people to this place. And so, and even our Lutheran church came here for the sake of religious liberty. We were literally persecuted in our homeland in Germany, and the Saxons literally came up through, through the Mississippi River and settled finally in St. Louis. Why? Because they wanted to be able to practice their faith, where the Prussian Union, the government, started to dictate to us what we were going to say in church. And so, you know, those kinds of things, having a land to where you could go to be faithful to your conscience, that's what drew so many people here to this place. And obviously the taxation without representation then became a part of, well, you know, you're not going to allow us to live freely. So we revolted against that too. But that was number 19 in the grievances. The first several grievances were all about religious liberty. And people have, we don't teach that anymore in our history books as if it was a secondary issue. No, it was primary. That's why we have a First Amendment right that protects your ability to be religious people in this culture. And that's fundamental. Fundamental.
When you say number 19, are you just kind of speaking rhetorically, or are you saying you're referring to an actual list where somebody came up with a list and, you know, number one, right to conscience?
Well, there were grievances, I'm speaking off the top of my head now.
Sure.
There were grievances that were sent to the king, and taxation without representation was one of them, but it was far down the list.
I see.
One of the main. Yeah, and so originally when the colonists were saying, you know, you usurped your authority, they were actually not rebelling. They were saying that the king is not honoring his duties, and we have the ability to justly now say no because we've tried to do everything legally. Well, people assume that it was all taxation, it was all economics. That's what was the big issue. No, the big issues even then was religious liberty, the ability to practice their faith, ability to actually control their own homes, you know, that kind of thing. And so again, de Tocqueville was one of the guys who, you know, referenced how religious America was. And now our kids are taught as if de Tocqueville didn't talk about any of that stuff. And so again, it's an editing of our history.
Sure.
And it's actually missing the point that religious liberty was the main driver for so many people back in those days.
And let me just add something real fast. Okay, Alexis de Tocqueville was a Frenchman who was sent over by his own government in the 1830s to study America. Why was it doing so well? You know, and that, and then he wrote his book, Democracy in America, which is still in print. And meanwhile, before that, we were talking about the different colonies that started. I want to refer people to something called the Avalon Project of Yale University. The Avalon Project of Yale University has a lot of the key documents throughout our history. And so you can look at the different colonies and you can see that, you know, I mean, even Jamestown was founded, you know, where they talked about the Christian religion and the Carolinas, you know, the Christian religion and certainly Boston and the Pilgrims and, you know, the Pilgrims, for example, they wrote in the Mayflower Compact having, what did they do? They said having to undertaken a voyage for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith. I mean, it was very explicitly Christian. Okay, so we have about 1 minute left. Religious freedom, even despite this so-called Respect for Marriage Act, religious freedom is worth fighting for, worth going to the mat for, correct? About a 1 minute concluding thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why this particular legislation is so nefarious is what it's saying is if you have a religious objection to the new notion of what marriage is in culture, you will not have the right to proclaim it or to live by it. And so our schools and our churches will now be under, they can be litigated against, or they must conform to this new ideological view of sex, sex practice, and marriage. And the reality is we know that male, female, mom and dad and child, that's the trinity of civility. And we're going to hold on to that because it's good for our culture, not just for our church, but we may have to pay a price for that. And religious liberty, we're just saying, let us be who we are. But I'm not sure they're going to let that happen.
Okay, Dr. Gregory Seltz, let me give your website. It is lcrlfreedom.org. Thank you, Dr. Seltz. All the best.
All the best to you, too.